You're listening to Miscarriage Stories with Arden Cartrett. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to jump on and make this super quick, but I wanted to let you know that with the holidays coming up, Cassia and I, who is a doula on my team, by the way, we have put together this incredible webinar for you. It's called Grieving Through the Holidays. It's a 17-minute webinar that you can get in video format, audio format, and you have access to a 20-page guidebook that serves as a workbook, but also has the transcript for the webinar and some extra information. It covers things like coping during the holiday season, setting goals, scripts for talking to people about miscarriage or answering their nosy questions, journal prompts, a deep dive into triggers, and so much more. You can get this for $15. It includes the audio, the video, and the guidebook. And you can access this or learn more if you'd like to by visiting the link in today's show notes. Okay, let's get into the episode. Anna, thank you so much for coming on to the Miscarriage Doula podcast. Whenever your team reached out, it was so nice to find an app that was fertility tracking, community, articles, all of this stuff. And so I wish I had that whenever I was trying to conceive. And so it was nice for me to learn more about that. And your app is Tilly, which is what brings you into the fertility community. But what led you here is your own personal story with recurrent pregnancy loss and infertility. And so I'd love to pass you the mic and have you share your story with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Where do I begin? I mean, I guess it all started out with the ordinary way with me and my husband sort of deciding that we were going to try to have a baby. And I think I was not at that moment very stressed about it. Like I felt, I had worries that, you know, things might not work out or so on, but like most people, you don't think it's going to happen to you. And then, but we basically, I became pregnant quite quickly. So we were lucky that way. And we were super happy, as you are. And looking back, very naive, I'm almost become angry with myself when I think about naive I was, but it's what it's like, you know. I told my closest friends and they were super happy and cried, and there's all of these big emotions sort of, and you just expect to have a baby basically, and then that's not how it ended up. But I around 9 weeks, I had a spontaneous miscarriage. So I basically woke up very early in the morning bleeding. And there's obviously a bit of, in the beginning, you're not sure what's happening and so on, but quite quickly it became pretty obvious what was happening. In many ways, obviously, you already mentioned, I went on to suffer further losses. And in many ways, obviously, it became more and more difficult because, you know, with each loss, you become more and more worried. It's never going to work out. But in one way, also, the first one was the most difficult because I was just so unprepared and never really didn't know anything about it or expected at all, I guess. And I was just, I think, even surprised myself of how sad I was, because I think I even said, like, you know, if, you know, miscarriages can happen, and if, you know, if I miscarriage, you know, you sort of, you know, that from a rational perspective that it can happen, and it doesn't have to mean that you know, that there's anything wrong with you, but still, from a more emotional perspective, that's not how I felt at all. And I was sort of overwhelmed of how sad I was. And I guess also, you know, it's a bit weird, you know, how when you tell someone you're pregnant, there's all of these huge emotions. And then when When you're not, you're just told that it's common and try again, basically, which is, well, weird in a sense. Like the sympathy you get is not really relatable to how happy you're allowed to be for pregnancy. So, and I think also from the healthcare system and all that, I was just, you know, I felt my emotions were perhaps, I mean, I was just told like not to worry, I guess. But I think, I mean, as I said before, I wasn't stressed at all before about becoming pregnant. But suddenly just having that miscarriage was just like pushing a button. Like it was all that I could think about. I became quite obsessed quickly for no rational reason at all. Like the rational side of me knew that, you know, probably can just try again and it could work out. But it was all that I was thinking about. Which, yeah, kind of surprised me in a way. But, well, what happened then is that I did become pregnant again. So we were, again, lucky to not have to struggle with that. And obviously the experience was quite different. Like, you don't expect for things to work out the same way with having had that experience, but rather, you know, there were lots of worries, and it's quite a lonely experience, as probably many listeners might have experienced themselves, because it's all about, I mean, you're sort of, it's just you and your body, and you're in it on your own, basically. And just, you know, I thought I started bleeding so many times, but I didn't, and everything looked good. And of course, with time, and especially passing 12 weeks, became less and less worried, because you felt that you sort of you know, made that line, and then but then at around 20 weeks, in Sweden we call it the routine ultrasound. I don't know if it's the same, but yeah, you do this ultrasound to check that everything is okay with the baby. It wasn't. Well, I guess what I was told was basically that our boy, which I already knew it was, didn't look healthy. And I think the doctor told me, you know, you have to come back next week, or you have to come to the hospital, we have better equipment and all that. But it was very obvious that he wasn't positive at all. I think there was a week or so of just running around to different experts and doctors and getting different, you know, like, verdicts on, you know, as much as they can tell you. And I think, it became very clinical, I think, the whole process, because it's, you know, no one really talked to me about the, you know, how I was feeling, or, the experience as such. It all came very much down to, you know, what could we tell about how, you know, if the baby could make it or not. And basically, we were told then that they were very, the odds were very bad, because our son, Malcolm, who we named him later, had like multiple malformations. So basically, I mean, it's hard to operate on the heart if the kidneys don't work, and so on. And so we made a decision to terminate the pregnancy, which is a decision that I know it's the right decision, but it's still a difficult one, and something I like will always question, I think, a bit. And I think, and then what happens is, I mean, looking back, I had no idea, because no one talked to me about, like, that I had to go through a delivery and all of these things. Like I had a miscarriage where I was bleeding, and I mean, there was some side of me, I think, just thought it might be a little bit like that, because yeah, I had no relation to, like, you know, not having given birth before. I mean, it's just like, you just don't know how much of a baby it actually is when you're that far along in some weird way, or at least I felt that I received very little information around that. And so I think the whole delivery was a shock in itself, and I could have come in a lot more prepared for sort of the decisions that you make then. But I still, and it was actually, I'm very happy because I went like on my own to see a therapist who helped me sort of understand before, you know, because there's all these questions about if you want to meet the baby and all of these things, which I mean, looking back, it was a very natural choice for me to do that and to get closure and all of these things. But I think if the question had just been thrown out, you know, after delivery, it's very difficult to make those kinds of decisions because you're sort of in shock. And I think also when it is a termination, I think it's weird, but like for people around you, it's sort of seen a little bit, or I don't know if people see it that way, but I felt like people saw it as it was my choice more than, but for me, it was obviously, it just felt like my baby died, like the way it happened, you know.
It a compassionate choice.
Yeah. I guess that's a very good way to put it. Like it is a active choice sort of, but in a way it isn't, because it's sort of, in a sense, you have no other choice. Oh, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, both options are horrible. Yeah, you know, it's not like you have a good option and a horrible option and you're choosing the horrible option. Like both options are equally horrible. And that's hard.
No, that's so true. And I think also, like, because in the, like, you know, if he'd been born a week later, he's considered, you know, as then, the terms, sort of the medical terms come into play there. And I think that affects a lot how it goes down, at least in the hospital that I was, like, then it's more treated sort of, differently. And they don't want, I think the staff and so don't want to force anything on you in a sense, but in a way I also felt that can sometimes be needed, because to me it was extremely important to have caution and honor. We spread his ashes in the ocean, like, outside our summer house, and it was just important to have sort of a ceremony. It's very weird that I mean I'm sometimes surprised how sad I become when I speak about it, because I, you know, it's but yeah, I still do. So
I don't think that pain goes away, you know. We learn to live with it. My first miscarriage happened 4.5 years ago, and I did a speaking thing and I just was sobbing in the middle of it. And I was like, this is very unexpected, because I talk about it all the time.
That's the thing. Like, everybody. And there's moments when I don't, like, you know, so it's, but it is what it is. And I think just like, a lot of losses, like whether the same thing a little bit, I mean, obviously it was different from their earlier miscarriage because fewer people knew then and all of that. This was more like it was quite obvious that I was pregnant and then I wasn't. But it was still a lot, you know, like, just, you know, you should be happy, you know, that didn't happen later, and you know, it will work out the next time, and all of that, and like, which sort of makes you feel you're not allowed to sort of just mourn that loss. And I think, and I think the difficult part with, I mean, I guess most losses is also that, I mean, in a way, you'd probably, what I needed is just to like stop and pause and take some time. But then you're also on the whole trying to have a baby journey. So, I mean, even if I didn't feel that any other baby could replace this one, you just also want to get started again. And so, I mean, obviously there was a natural break, but we did start trying again. And I became pregnant again. And honestly, I think that third time around, I didn't even do the super early checkup, because I just felt that, okay, but now, like, it can't go wrong, basically, because now I've had my share, and this will work out. And so I went for the first scan in week 11, and turned out I had a missed abortion. And I think that's really when hopelessness like kicked in for real. I just felt that, okay, but this, like, you know, bad luck, which I was told, because they also, I mean, they made the genetic investigation and couldn't find anything. So basically what you're told is that this was bad luck. And I just felt that, okay, bad luck. It just, you know, this is too much. I think even from there, I also think I was very fed up with sort of owning the whole process myself. I just wanted someone to sort of come in and solve it for me, I guess. And so what we ended up doing after that was that we went for IVF, then with PGTA or PGS, which it was called then, where you sort of scan the embryos for chromosomal abnormalities, because they basically told me, you know, yeah, that might increase your chances to have a healthy pregnancy. And I had lots of eggs and lots of embryos, and they did the PGTA testing, and it all looked great. And like, and obviously the doctor was like, you've had a quite easy time to become pregnant. So yeah, they were extremely positive. Then I didn't become pregnant at all for any of the quite many transfers that we did. And it was just like, obviously then suddenly a new problem, which was obviously very frustrating. And also this whole illusion of putting everything in someone else's hands. For anyone who did IVF, you know, just suddenly gives you like 10,000 new things that you can worry about, like your lining and stuff like that you didn't even know that you could worry about. So obviously it just added on a new set of stress. After a few transfers that failed, and they basically didn't really know why, we took a break, and then I became pregnant basically on the first try when not doing IVF, which was felt very ironic. But obviously we were also super happy about that. But also obviously extremely worried that anything would go wrong, both like in early pregnancy, and did a lot more scans than we had before and all of that. But I mean, since they hadn't found an issue, you know, you also think that, you know, a little bit like, what can possibly go wrong? We're expecting a girl this time. And then around 17 weeks, they realized that there was something wrong again. So basically, history repeated itself. It's a little bit like I said before. You can't really compare, you know, all of the losses are difficult. And in one way, it was more difficult, or like it just felt, you know, like the whole unfairness in it is obviously huge. But I also came in a lot more prepared, which is like a weird thing to say, and it doesn't make it easy at all. But at least I was not completely clueless around what would happen. And also, I think what I needed to cope with it, because I think after losing Malcolm, I had a lot of therapy to sort of figure out how to deal with it. That obviously helped in a sense, but it doesn't take the pain away, obviously. It just makes you more capable of coping in some ways.
I imagine that was really triggering too, for history to repeat itself, because when you have a second trimester loss, especially one that you're told it's just bad luck, the way things are developing and like nothing that is genetic that could be done, you start to think, well, surely this isn't going to happen again. And then when it does happen again, I imagine that feels like, what is today's date? Like, what year am I in that this is happening again? You know, I imagine that was a surreal shock.
Yeah, no, it definitely was, because it's like you say, it's just like, it just can't happen. And like, you know, like, it just feels like beyond, I mean, whenever people today talk about odds or like things like that, I'm just like, yeah, you know, I'm just, I know that that's just numbers, and sometimes they're not true, basically. And I think it was also like, we went in for the delivery and all of, you know, that horrible like experience and saying goodbye. And then a week later, my father was, because this was during the spring of 2020.
Mm.
And my father fell ill in COVID and was put in the ventilator. And this was like a week after, and I think this whole, he made it, but he was, he was in the ventilator for, a little, almost four weeks. And I think that whole period is just like very blurry to me, because it was again, like you feel, okay, so this can't happen, basically. Yeah. And then you feel, okay, but this really can't happen. Like, I was already, you know, in this mess, having to deal with this, and then this happened. It's just, it's very surreal, I think. And a shock, basically. Like, I think for a lot of people who experienced, any kind of shock or like very traumatic experience, you know that like in the beginning, like the shock is sort of, it numbs you, like it's like you can't feel anything, you become very like rational. I remember I had these like weird, this was with my first with Malcolm, or like the first second trimester loss. I remember some of the conversation I had the first days were like, yeah, so the name that we picked out, can we use that for another baby? And it was all these, like when I look back, I'm like, okay, why, how does that matter? Like, but you just become very, you focus on like the things that you can control, basically, and like how you want to do it, and like very like goal oriented. And then a lot of the emotions come after a while. I guess it's some kind of just, you know, just protect yourself because you can't handle everything at once. So yeah. But yeah, that's I mean, what they basically told us after that was, okay, so we still can't find any genetic issue, but basically now that it happened twice and also with the miscarriages, which I mean, you obviously don't know the reason or you can't prove the reason, right? Sort of, but you know, looking at the full picture, we were told basically like the most likely there is a genetic disorder, like, you know, that either me or my husband, but most likely we carry the same genetic disorder, but it's unidentified and that's why we can't find it.
Well, then what are you supposed to do? That sounds like, yeah. So
that, yeah, sounds, it's like a science lost fiction.
Yeah, like that's like a probable diagnosis that they can't confirm or treat because they don't know, exactly, if it exists.
No, exactly, because like if you know that you have a, if you know the genetic disorder you're looking for, you can then use like PGD or,
right,
PGTS, like to, you know, to look for that disorder and eliminate it. And basically what they told us was like, yeah, so regardless of like how this disorder comes into play, there's never 100% risk. Like in the case that they thought was most likely, which is that me and my husband share the same unidentified genetic disorder, it's like, yeah, I can only laugh about it because it's so like weird. They said, so it's a 25% risk, but then, you know, and they said, so you can just keep trying basically, which obviously completely disregards the fact that going through these losses is like a psychological challenge. But I think these, right, guys that work with, or and women that work with genetics, they're just like, that's what they focus on. They don't really think about the emotional process of of suffering losses at all. So I think, because then I was lucky that I had a doctor that I could at least, you know, I think he thought I was an interesting case, or we, so he spent quite a lot of time on like discussing back and forth. And he said like, cause I then said like, isn't a donation or like, you know, just something that we could try, just like bringing one person's DNA out of the picture. And he was like, yeah, but there's no guarantee because we don't know, you know, who's the carrier and all of that. So like, I think you should just keep trying basically. But I think for us, it was just, I mean, you say that just doing the same mistake over and over again makes you stupid. And that's a little bit how it felt. Like it can be, it's a statistically 25% risk, but that doesn't mean it can't happen 8 times in a row. And I felt that I was, you know, not in a, because it also feels like, terminating another pregnancy was just not an option basically, or, I mean, at least not without trying something else. And so we went for egg donation, and that's how we had our son last year. So, we still don't know if we were just lucky, because it could be my husband is the carrier and we just were lucky that time around, which is extremely frustrating. I think anyone who's went through infertility and like, you just want, like it's when it's unexplained and like you just, sometimes you just want them to tell you like, this is wrong, or like, even you can never have a child, just like, but all of these open questions are super frustrating. But obviously, like, in a way, I mean, at least we did have our son, and in that sense it doesn't really matter. Yeah, that's my story, I guess. And I often say that like this whole process is apart from like changing me in a lot of ways, of course, it gave me two children, like, or obviously, Malcolm and I also consider them my children, with one living child. And then my company, Tilly, which is my other baby, sort of, that came out of the whole process, because I realized, or I felt, that there was so much support lacking, and wanted to do something about that, which a lot of other people like you as well are doing, which is amazing. And I think, I mean, when you experience something yourself, that's sort of a great starting point for trying to solve a problem, because you gain a unique understanding, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. I like to say that I went into this because I wanted to create what I desperately needed and couldn't find. But it's a lot like you said, you know, in even like the medical professionals, they don't tell you exactly what to expect. They're just like, okay, you know, they're walking you through the procedure of a termination, right? And then they're like, and then we'll induce you. And you're like, what does that mean? You know, you don't know what that means, because you haven't gone through it at that point. And even if you had, like, to not be told what's going to happen to you, it's a special pain. I felt that way with my first miscarriage, that I miscarried at 10 weeks, and I was just repeatedly told it would be a heavy period. And I'm somebody who has very heavy periods. I'm very used to the pain of periods and a lot of blood. And that was labor, and nobody prepared me for it. And that's what sparked me to talk about it, as morbid and horrible as it is, just to kind of get it all out there. At the time of, sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
Well, I was going to bring it back to Tilly, because at the time of my miscarriages, all we had were the apps, like that are pregnancy apps, but they have some stuff geared towards fertility. And so it's really just tracking and like what week of pregnancy. But I remember marking that I had a miscarriage, and I just didn't receive emails anymore. And some of them I did receive emails still for, like, I didn't receive support from these fertility apps. And so I think it's an incredible offering. When your son was born, were you already working on Tilly? Was he kind of like, was his birth a big part of the inspiration? Walk me through what that looked like.
Yeah, so we actually started Tilly before. I mean, I met Chenyan, my co-founder, who's also been through, or she suffered 5 miscarriages as well. So she had recurrent pregnancy loss. And so we met, and then I was in the midst of the IVF part of the journey. So I very much was on the journey when I started Tilly, which I think, I think for me, it was in a sense, it was part of my own processing and therapeutic in a way, because I sort of felt that I could use, you feel that it's so unfair, and like, why does this happen to me and all of that. And when you do something, at least you feel that you can, make it into something useful in some sense, at least, which was very helpful to me. And then Lev was born. So then we'd been up and running obviously things took a while, and we've tried all kinds of different things, but for a year and a half or something like that. So he's sort of been part of it. And I think, sometimes I can think that, you know, that because I've done like IVF and PGTA and donation and like, early loss, like, I feel sometimes, I had to go all through all of these things, like to understand like all of the many perspectives as well that there is within. I think very often I felt like myself as well, that we put all of the infertility sort of into one one box, but there are so many different, both diagnoses and reasons and treatments and outcomes, and like obviously the emotional experience is often very much the same, like regardless exactly how it plays out, but there is room for a lot of personalization when it comes to like information and support, because yeah, it looks very different depending on what you're struggling with.
Yeah, 100%. And it's hard whenever it's all lumped together to where it's like one type of support is given by medical professionals. And it's usually like, oh, take a cycle and recover and then just try again. Yeah. You'll be fine. And, you know, it's just, we need so much more. Yeah. And I feel like in our day and age now, you know, all of these women that are going through infertility and loss, I think that we're kind of fed up with not having support in our own journeys, that we're creating yeah. these spaces. And it's sad that we are doing that, but it's also beautiful in a way too. It's hard to pinpoint how much of each it is, you know. Obviously I wish that none of us were here, but yep. it's a beautiful thing to come out of a really horrible thing.
Yeah. And it's amazing that we do have more conversations around these topics. Cause I think a lot of the, I mean, one of the things that I felt, or that I disliked it so much, was that I felt some kind of shame, which I, you know, I couldn't understand why, in a sense, because the rational part of me understood that this is not my fault and all of that. But I think, I mean, a lot of that shame comes from us not having talked about these issues. I mean, it's not that long ago that you didn't talk about it at all. And I mean, obviously, like, that kind of silence just breeds shame, and that it's like you're told it's not something that you should talk about, or it's not something that you should make a big deal out of, or all of these things. And I think I mean, any kind of conversation around it, whether it's a celebrity sharing or your podcast, or just, you know, like, also I think, I mean, until right now, like, we're focusing very much on adding more tools for sort of the psychological side of things, because it's so neglected, and also help to educate clinics and give them tools around it. Because what we've seen is that, I mean, therapy is obviously amazing, but there's often a barrier to for people to take that step, because you may not even understand yourself how like how stressed you are, or I mean, from this experience. And I think there are ways for a digital tool to complement the more traditional ways of seeking support, because it's yeah, there's a lower barrier, and it can be there on an everyday basis. And obviously tying in also the whole social aspect of, you know, finding other people and understanding that you're not alone, and that you're not crazy for having the thoughts you have, because there's lots of other people that have them as well. So I think, yeah, so that's something that we're looking a lot at. And I'm hoping that going forward, that it will become a sort of an integrated part of fertility care, that you're also looking after the whole, I mean, there's so much research showing how high mm-hmm. stress levels are, and how much it impacts patients. I mean, that it's the same stress levels as cancer patients and so on. But still, it's not really an integrated part of the care. And I'm hoping that it can become.
Yeah. Sorry. That would be ideal for our mental health to be more of a concern for our healthcare providers. I don't feel like it's taken into account. And I think throughout my miscarriage journey, I always thought, well, if I had a living child, they would take me more seriously. And then I had a living child, and I still didn't feel like my mental health was cared about, which I feel like kind of sparked more rage in me of like, can we care about people going through these really big life-altering things? Mm-hmm. But also having a living child after so much loss is its own type of grief and difficult too, because there's a lot of aspects that I found difficult in motherhood after loss. And there wasn't anything to prepare me for that either. It's just all around, I feel like we don't have access to as much information, or, you know, maybe people feel shameful and so they don't share. And I do think that is starting to change. My mom actually had a miscarriage at 12 weeks and she got in the car after her DNC. Her mom picked her up from the hospital and her mom told her in that moment that she had to terminate a baby at 24 weeks. And she had never told any of her kids that before. Mm-hmm. She chose that moment to share. And the quote that my mom always tells me from this story has always stuck with me. My grandma said to her, "At least you didn't have to make a choice." And I always think about that whenever I hear stories that contain termination for medical reasons, because that was a pain that my grandma carried around and didn't feel like she could talk about in the early 90s. You know, it happened way before that, but that's when she told my mom. But so I think it is a generational thing. I think we're talking about it more. Just definitely. Still so isolating.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think I think we still sort of carry that. I mean, because I think these taboos or shame, they don't go away like completely right. in a generation, but we're definitely moving in the right direction, which is great. Because I think, the more we talk about it, the more we can educate each other. I mean, both on that we... there's less shame and so on, but also educating each other on how we can support someone and, you know, create better sort of norms for how to support someone going through this. So, yeah, so I think that's great, definitely. We're not done, but yeah. But it's weird when these things sort of come up. I think that's so common. Like when we had our first miscarriage and there were so many people around us, we're like, yeah, you know, we had one. Or like, but you just didn't have any clue. And obviously it might be a thing that doesn't come up. Or like, I mean, it's not like you have to talk to every single person, but it's also weird that it's something that you're sort of expected not to share. Yeah.
Well, and I think that whenever you go through it personally, you realize how traumatic it is. And then you meet somebody who's like, yeah, I had one too. And you've known this person and you're like, how did you go through such trauma? And I had no idea. I feel like that was always my viewpoint. Like that was the most traumatic thing that's happened to me. How did I not know that you went through what I went through, you know? I feel like that's kind of my realization of then I'm understanding that person a little bit differently. And then you're like, also, they hit it well.
And I think you talked a little bit about motherhood after loss and all that. I spoke to a therapist that we work with the other day, and she said, like, she has a growing like number of patients that are, you know, that come to her after they actually had a baby, because that's sort of when it all catches up with them. Because when you're sort of on the having a baby journey, you become perhaps very, it's easy to become very focused on that goal and all the medical stuff, and just like you may not feel that you even have the time or space to sort of care for yourself. And that, but I also think that that's sort of, you know, evidence of how much it affects you, because it's not just about having a baby and then you have the baby and then it all goes away. It's like, it affects you in so many other dimensions, your own person, but also your relationships and so on. And I think it's something that you just, you will have to deal with it at some point. And I think when we work on our tools now for the app, I think it's also very interesting to see how, in many ways, obviously the I mean, when you look at the type of tools that are, you know, evidence-based for coping with different things, I mean, it's very much the same tools that be used for, you know, other types of grief or other challenging situations. But what I think is that for them to be really useful for this challenge, there is also a need to sort of adapt them, whether it's wording or just like for the specific challenges that you or triggers or what it is that you have along this journey. And I think that's, I mean, if we can acknowledge that infertility and loss impacts us emotionally, then I mean, there's also a need to have tools that are like specifically adapted for that challenge. I mean, and I think, because I think, I was in therapy that I ended up just thinking was more triggering than not going to therapy, because it's like, and I think that is also because it is a misunderstood challenge because we haven't talked about it. The more we can talk about it, I think the better support can become in all kinds of ways, and really also taking away that, because I feel that I very often felt that I was overreacting, that I was a little bit blaming myself for, and that can easily become sort of a negative, you know, or it becomes a very toxic, because you feel bad and then you feel bad for feeling bad. And like, right. And I think that's extremely important to, just get rid of, which is also why I like sharing my story, because I feel that, you know, when you listen to other people that seem like normal people, which I hope I do, and like you hear them having the same emotions and thoughts, you can just, okay, so it's, you know, this is a valid or, you know, reasonable reaction.
100%. Yeah, I completely agree. And with the Tilly app, so I have to tell you, I downloaded it. I've been on it today, like looking through it and just going through. So it has period tracking and fertility tracking. It has a community aspect to it where you can like write posts and find things based on different topics, which is really great. And then you have really great articles. You have some courses. What am I missing that I've not mentioned?
We have some, like for the, the self-care section is what we call it, but there are some meditations and also guided journaling. I really loved journaling, which basically is just writing down your thoughts. For me, it was a great tool of getting things, you know, out and gaining perspective on them. And so we have some guided journaling for different, you know, if you're triggered by a pregnancy announcement or, you know, self-worth or so on. And then, we just added this course just last week, which we developed together with psychologists. So it's basically a program. I mean, we say can do it over, recommended to do it over 8 weeks, but it's really at your own pace. But it's basically going through modules of like coping with triggers or worrying and improving self-worth. And it's just basically a number of exercises and interactive exercises, and also you can connect with other people in the community and so on, and work on these things, and also, you know, finding things that give you energy, you know, because it's easy to get fully consumed by the fertility journey. I know that firsthand, and sometimes it's important to also remember that you have other things in life. So we try to, through those 8 weeks, guide users through basically feeling better. I mean, you can't take the sort of hard parts away, but I think there are ways for us to not, I mean, to find tools to not become entirely consumed, and sometimes stopping some of those thought loops that can, you know, take over. So that's what's included in that course. And there will be more to come on that theme as well. And it's available. That can be like just a practical fact. It's both on App Store and Android, and for Android or Google Play then, and available in the US as well. And it's in English, not in Swedish, because that might be difficult for.
No, it's a great app. It's very clean, very easy to look through and read a lot of stuff, but not overwhelming at all. I think it's a really great resource. And so I'll put a link in the show description, that way people can download it either for iPhone or for Google Play, I think is what it's called for.
Exactly. Yeah. Android.
Wherever people get apps, I'll put links that way they can do that.
That's amazing.
It is a great resource. And I was looking through some of the community posts, and it looks like the community is super active, a lot of different topics. So I feel like if anybody is looking for a safe place to go, it's a great place to start.
Definitely.
Anna, thank you so much for coming on and for sharing your story so openly. You know, every story is unique, but you say things that I know people are going to relate to. You know, even though my story is different, I related to so much. And I think by using your voice to share your story, it gives other people the courage to share theirs, maybe, or just like sitting in solidarity that this crap sucks. And, you know, there's no one way that it gets better, but somehow we work through it, right? And we move forward in our journeys. So I appreciate you sharing, and I appreciate you sharing Tilly. Anything else that you'd like to add about Tilly, or anything for me to include?
No, I mean, just we love feedback and ideas and all of that. Like, that's how we improve. So you can always reach out to us, I mean, through Instagram or email or anything like that. So we love to hear from anyone who tries to act. But other than that, thank you for having me, and for having this podcast, and shining light on this important topic that makes a lot of difference.